Everybody stop talking now. Attention. I told you, all of my critics, I told you all that I was the greatest of all time. When I beat Sonny Liston, I told you today I'm still the greatest of all time. Never again defeat me.
Never again
say that I'm going to be defeated. Never again
make me the underdog until I'm about 50 years old.
That's right.
Then you might get me.
That is better than most. Better than most.
To the back of the end zone, and it is caught for a touchdown by Holmes.
Up the shelf, 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe it, Barrett Holmes? Yes!
The GOATed Podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in again. I'm humbled you keep coming back. I don't know why you'd want to hear my voice. I hate hearing my voice. No, I'm kidding. Most of the time I do. Blessed to have you all. Thank you so much for listening. I have known Chris Meehan here, our co-host, for almost a year now, right? Longer than a year.
Longer than almost 2 years.
Almost 2 years.
Yeah.
Man, time's flown. And in the 2 years I've known you, I've never met one of your friends. I didn't know you had any friends. No, I'm kidding. And we have one today. No, we have one today, and I've heard great things already. I'm so excited to have Michael here. I'm going to let Chris intro because I would just be guessing on stuff we've talked about recently the last couple of days preparing for this. But give us an intro to Michael Buono.
Yeah,
welcome.
Thanks, Mike, for being here. So, I mean, it's obviously always an honor to have some of these esteemed people on the podcast, like, you know, Keith Stewart or Travis Fulton that we've had on before, and I'm sure many more to come. But it's even cooler when that person also happens to be one of your best friends, right? So, you know, Michael and I went to high school together back in Northern Virginia, or I guess it was actually, you know, Southern Maryland. But known Michael a super long time, stud athlete, played high school baseball, you know, as a pitcher, bat left-handed. I remember, you know, hearing the stories that his dad taught him to hit lefty when he was a kid, just because of the advantage he'd have in the batter's box. And then obviously Mike and I played on the varsity golf team for 4 years together at the Heights. And that was an awesome experience. But after high school, you know, Mike went on to Princeton University. So he's a smart cat, always has been. Studied computer science there and, you know, worked for a long time in the, I think, data security and privacy, right, sector for Square. And so again, really multifaceted, talented guy. And Mike, it's awesome to have you here, buddy.
Thanks for having me. This is incredible. What an introduction. Chris and I go way back. We are thick as thieves. Just so many memories in those practice rounds at the Heights, tearing up the golf course.
Yeah.
Just really getting after it out there. But yeah, thanks guys for having me. This is amazing.
Yeah. I'm pumped now. No, that's amazing. And the Heights, for those of you that don't know, I mean, you can Google this, but they play really the top schools in the country. So it's funny we talk about, we're in our 30s now. Chris, you're in your 30s now, right?
Yep.
You are 30.
Yep. That
we're in
day
our 30s.
Has come.
So this is the time we talk about our high school days and varsity sports. And there's nothing wrong with it until we hit about 40. And then you got to stop, I think. But no, the Heights is legit. Any of those sports, and I'm excited to hear those stories. And then Princeton, that's sick. And Square, that background, we can learn a bunch from you. And I'm excited to hear about that. So pumped.
And then,
to hear.
I always, you know, joke with Mike that we need to get him on to talk some basketball because I really wished he could have been on and here for that episode with Joey and Mike. He would have loved that, but big. Big basketball guy. Obviously, I didn't mention this, but played high school basketball as well. Really played every sport, it seemed like. He was just always the athletic version of that I wanted. You know what I mean? Like, I looked up to him athletically in, like, every field. But, yeah, stud athlete and even better person. So, awesome. Awesome that
wow.
You can be here.
I don't know about that.
Love it.
That episode was amazing, though. I listened to that basketball episode when you had those dudes on, and That was fantastic. I had some thoughts on the GOAT debate, but I'm sure we'll get to that later.
I love that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That was a big, a lot of people love that episode too, to just hear the debate of the GOAT. And I know that's the thing, which is something we got to talk about later on or off podcast, but I think you could help us build. When you said Princeton, I think of The Social Network. I never had Princeton or Ivy League on my radar. I didn't even want to go to college. I was ready to start working when I was 14 or 15, but I went to college. But I think of the people he met at Harvard, right? Harvard Law is really. And that's all the same. That's really all I know. But I was thinking, like, of course it went from there to Square, because that's where my mentality went to The Social Network. And we'll talk about something, because the Vote the Goat thing, we own Vote the Goats. And I want to create something like Facebook, where you just vote on the two hot, who's hotter or who's not, or who's hotter of the two. I want to create something voting the goats, because everyone loves to debate the goats. And we usually get to that in the middle of the show, but or around the end. But I'm excited to hear that too, and we can jump into it. But the software side of that, I think, is a genius idea. We got to do it. I'm putting it on we can cut it out of the podcast, but it's going to come. It's already being built some, but we definitely need some help. Probably need Mike's help on that.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Because the categories are endless. I sent our developers hundreds of categories already, and I was just spitballing, you know, best Italian food, best fast food cheeseburger, best basketball player of all time, best, and they just pick like Facebook was created. So we got to talk about that after. But so you mentioned that podcast. Let's jump into it. Who's the GOAT? What's your opinion on is it the LeBron Michael debate or Kobe?
So here's the thing. I think part of it is the conversation itself is pretty messy. And I think it's important to sort of set parameters. I think, first of all, it's really hard to talk about somebody that you never watched live. It's different. And I think that's fine. And I think we like saying that this person was the greatest ever. And there's definitely a space for that. But I think what we're more equipped to talk about is who is the greatest player that you ever watched, or the most compelling player that you ever watched. And to me, I have a lot of respect for what LeBron has done. And I think by a lot of metrics, he is potentially the greatest player of all time. But the thing I always go back to with LeBron to like kind of intro this conversation is, when I think about the great athletes in other sports that I've gotten to watch, I think about Tiger, Serena Williams, Michael Phelps at that Olympics, even Tom Brady at the end of his career. There's this phenomenon that happens where everybody watches that person because they want to watch history, even people that don't really care about the sport. And so it's like people watch Tiger at the Masters because they want to be a part of history, and they're like, this is the guy, this is the person that's the best that I've ever seen. And I don't know whether it's social media or maybe, but I don't think it is. I think LeBron was always just at the cusp, where he still got a lot of people rooted against him, or he didn't quite hit that level for me where people were like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna tune in to watch LeBron because he's gonna do something special.
Michael.
I think Michael had that, but I can't quite speak to that because I was probably 5 when I was really watching him. I didn't really like experience it. I have a hot take for the person. Like, I'm obsessed with basketball. I watch a lot of basketball, too much. There is such a thing, but this is a very hot take, and I don't mean this as I think this is the greatest player of all time, but the most compelling and to me the best player that I've ever watched play basketball is Stephen Curry.
He's my guy. I thought you were going to say the Minnesota guard.
I mean,
that's tearing
give him 5 more years, and I think he'll be in that conversation potentially. But Curry. To me, and this is one of the things where I think when we look back, Steph is going to get a lot of flowers, but I think also people that didn't experience what it was like to watch him become who he became are not going to get it. Like that unanimous MVP season, He was the first unanimous MVP in NBA history. And he basically, he was changing the game before anybody knew that it needed to be changed. And he was just pulling up from half court. He was shooting like 45% from three. He was taking, he probably took more threes that season than some teams did. Like it was unbelievable the audacity. And to watch somebody that small, there haven't really been a lot of players at his size that have been the dude. Like if you look at who are the greatest players ever, it's, you know, it's Michael, it's LeBron, it's Bill Russell, Kareem. Like these are big dudes. They're 6'7" and up because there's an element of physicality to basketball that, you know, if you're bigger and stronger, you're going to be better. And he was doing it and he was chopping these dudes up with a smile on his face. Just this little guy that looks so unassuming. And then actually he's a killer and he has that goated mindset of like, he hates to lose. And it's just, he's above the fray. He's playing games. Even I'll never forget, there was a playoff game during their title run. He misses two free throws in an elimination game and he's laughing at the free throw line. He's laughing. He's like, yeah, I've got it. Like, doesn't matter. I'm good. Yeah. Like I'm enjoying. He's so present in the moment and it's sickening for the other team. They're like, how is this guy? What is wrong with him? Like he's a sicko. And I think that's watching him during his peak years was probably the moment for me where I was like, this is the best player that I've ever seen. Or at least
love it.
I watch him the way that I watch Tiger. And I don't know if I could say that for a lot of other players.
That's a really good point. You know, I've never thought about it that way, but you're so right. Like LeBron, I mean, for lack of a better word, like still has a lot of haters, right? Mm-hmm. And you could say Tiger's got haters, but nothing to do with his golf game, right? It's everything off the field.
Yeah,
like people don't like LeBron and like when he's playing basketball. Nobody dislikes Tiger when he's playing golf, right? Like that's really interesting and a really good point. I wonder if it's possible to reach that kind of echelon if you have that. And Steph definitely has that. I mean, as somebody who's not a basketball guy, when that run you're talking about at his peak, I was watching basketball. It got me watching basketball. There's never been a time in LeBron's career that LeBron's play or whatever team he's on in the finals ever got me to turn the TV on. Just hasn't done it, right? I'll watch highlights here and there, right? I'll see that he wins this and that. I'll see where he goes. But I don't care ever, right? Steph, I cared. It was like, let's watch the show. and he really did change the game.
There's a factor for sure. You brought up a couple great points, but I'm thinking now, I honestly think to be goated status, like an undeniable GOAT status, there needs some story, right? And LeBron, for whatever reason, was dunking on kids in like 9th grade, 10th grade. You're buying his rookie card when he was at St. Vincent, St. Mary's, buying his shoes, whatever. And it's not this, it wasn't this story like all the guys you mentioned. It's interesting. Serena and ladies that you mentioned. Steph slept on. Tom Brady drafted 5th round, 6th round. You don't, that all helps. That's interesting. We have to examine that more in this goated discussion. And it's also a pain. It's not easy to reach that undeniable status when you're whining all the time. Like goats really don't whine. I mean, Michael Jordan would say his piece and then be like, move on.
Yeah.
Fall down 9 times. But this guy just whines. He's still whining. LeBron James.
I think the other thing too about, and I think this is probably true across the entire goated debate, I think the people that we consider to be the goats oftentimes are different than what came before them in some sort of unique way. And like you think about Michael and his athleticism. He was coming out of an era of Magic and Bird, and they were great. And Magic was certainly an athlete, but Michael was completely different. He was, or you think about Tiger, the way that he just, the force that he swung with and like the physical condition that he was in, the athleticism. And I think with guys like, even if you think about Kobe versus LeBron, like why we don't think about Kobe the way we think about LeBron. Kobe, not in terms of what he did on the court, but the way it looked a lot like Michael. We had seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It wasn't new. Not to say he wasn't incredible, because he was, but
yeah,
it was kind of the same. And like, I think the same is true for LeBron. He's a super athlete, but the way that he, the spots that he scores from on the floor, the way that he controls the game is not a different thing that we've necessarily seen. We haven't seen it all. He has everything. He has taken pieces of different people's games. But with Steph, it's like nobody ever shot the ball from that far. Nobody yeah. ever was a little guard and was the number one scorer or the MVP in the league. You were the point guard. Like, the point guard was supposed to be setting up everybody else, making sure everybody else gets their buckets. They're the, you know, they're the manager of the team. They're yeah. and he was like, no, I don't care. I'm that good. I'm gonna shoot it from 35 feet, or maybe I'll shoot it from half court. Or he was making three quarters court shots, like at the end of halves and yeah. stuff. He just looks, the way that he scores and the spots on the floor that he gets to. And now everybody wants to be him. And he kind of helped the league understand the power of the three-point shot, even though
yeah.
I don't know if we're ever going to see somebody. I think we'll see somebody be a yeah. great shooter, but it's not going to feel like it felt. There's
true.
An incredulousness
the
yeah. of like, I can't, even during his MVP season, it was like, I know this guy is great and I know he's going to show up. But every game, it would be like, I'm surprised somehow, or it's yeah. shocking to watch.
No, I don't think there will be anyone like that again. That's a mm-hmm. good point. That, I mean, how'd you like the take? I mean, I still stand by, and I had a couple people after that podcast. It's so hard for me when someone says, who's the best basketball player of all time? I coached for a long time. Wish I could have played it, but I'm 5'9". I could shoot, I can play, but I was never going to play competitively. So I coached. If I'm going to say you're the best basketball player of all time, like in the hood, you got to play one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have, like, there's kids in the hood that he's the best guy in the hood because you can't stop him. You can yep. put four mm-hmm. goons on his team and we might beat him. But so that's why, like, it's LeBron for me. And I hate saying that for basketball player. And Shaq has to be like second. Like, I don't yeah. see anybody getting the ball from Shaq in a one-on-one match. Like, he could potentially end the game. And if he wanted to, he could literally end the game by just tearing down the backboard with this first dunk. He could just score and end the park game right there. And yeah. that's the GOAT.
Yeah.
But if it's the best NBA player of all time, Steph Curry is legitimately. I coached Seth Curry. I was at Liberty University.
No so way. Seth,
his brother, and I met Dell a bunch of times. And Dell can still shoot the lights out of the gym. And they're the best shooting family in the world to ever live. And I think he passed Dell's record when he broke the three-point record was Dell's record, his dad. Mm-hmm. So, studs. I mean, it's a good point because he's done some stuff that shouldn't be accomplished. So,
yeah.
I love it.
We've talked about this on the podcast a little bit ad nauseum, obviously, like the GOAT debate. But one thing that we spoke about with Joey and Mike was this exact thing. And that's what, for you, defines the greatest player of all time. And I kind of have the opinion that Jonah has when he gave his take on this on the Travis Fulton podcast regarding golf. And that's when we're talking about a sport, a professional sport, right? For me, like, what really moves the needle is championships. Like, I just don't see how you can not include that as an attribute to, like, defining the greatest player of all time. And so, like, I mean, I don't know if that, like, would change things for you, but Mike, do you think about championships a ton when you think about the greatest athlete of all time in a particular sport, or is it more about the skill of the actual player? And like Kevin said, if I'm going to put them up one-on-one, like against anybody else, are they going to beat them?
Yeah, I think it definitely comes into play. And I think it makes basketball, you get some wild takes because, again, with the parameters of the discussion, greatest player of all time, sometimes people think most skilled or best in one-on-one. And it's like, you could probably make the argument that Kyrie Irving is one of the best basketball players or one of the most skilled guards that we've ever seen. The things he can do with the basketball are absolutely ridiculous. It's like, we take it for granted because all these players are so skilled, but he can do some wild stuff with the ball. He's spinning it on his dribbles. He's got a whole bag. For me, it's a soft thing. You know what I mean? It's subjective. It's obviously championships. You have to have those. But I think it's a feeling of like, if you're cheering for that team or that team is playing against you, even if it's the biggest spot, if that guy's going against you, you're terrified. Like, I grew up watching Michael Jordan play the Knicks, and there was just an inevitability about him. It was like, it's over. From the opening tip, it's over. Yeah. The game is 100%. Over. The Knicks are not beating him. It's not possible. He's not going to allow it to happen. And watching that Steph Curry Warriors team, it was like, I have no fear. This team is winning. Like, the Durant stuff, you can put it aside. But I think it counts, but I'm talking about like that first championship and even the 22 chip as well. It's like, they're good. Game 4 was one of the craziest games I've ever seen in the finals. Curry has like 40 and he's hitting shots that are insane, and he's ripping the soul out of this team that is way better than him, and it doesn't matter. It's just, and that team, you could see, it was like, well, we have no chance against this guy. And I think the last thing I'll say is, to me, every GOAT has at least one moment on the biggest stage, whether it's a championship or a major championship, where they've already established their greatness. They have nothing to prove. The odds are against them. You're sitting there as a viewer going, you know, you don't have to. It's okay. I get it. There are a ton of excuses. I'm not going to hold this one against you. And they do it anyway. Like Tiger 2008, Michael Phelps's last relay, like Tom Brady against the Falcons, Steph in 22 with nobody on his team still doing it. Like Jordan, when he comes back and three-peats the second time, it's like, there's always that moment of like, you don't have to, Tiger, you have a torn ACL, dude. You don't have to keep going. It's okay if you lose this one to Rocco. You should probably get surgery. Nah, I got it. Like, that's to me what it means to be a GOAT. It's like, in spite of all odds, the maximum adversity, you almost become an underdog. And it's like, why did you ever count me out? Like, I remember watching Tom Brady growing up. I'm a huge Jets fan. Tom Brady had destroyed the Jets. You know, he made a living beating the Jets every year, at least two times. And I hated him. You know, I sports hated him, as Bill Simmons would say. I didn't hate him. I sports hated him. Until they're down 28-3 or whatever it was in that Super Bowl. And I'm sitting there watching it and I'm going, you know what? He's done this so many times to me. And I actually believe in him that he can do it. And I would love to see it. And so that moment I became a Tom Brady fan. And I was like, come on.
I love it.
Come on, do it. I want to. And it was that GOAT moment for me of like, this is the guy. I got to see this. And
I'm a Dolphins fan. You just said exactly what I went through at that Super Bowl. I'm a Dolphins fan. I put money on him at the half. Because everyone at this party is going, Falcons, Dirty Birds. And I'm going, you have no idea. This is not over. It's never over. No. And unless he's in Miami, you can't be counted out. And same thing. Sports hate him. And that night, I was like, it's it, babe. He's the GOAT. I'm sorry for everything I've ever said to him. It's
Well, it's interesting, right? Because you two are both fans of teams that suffered through him, you know, in the same division for so many years.
Yep.
As somebody that is a fan of a team from the NFC East, right? We didn't see him once in a blue moon. So like if he was going to come in here and beat the Skins, I mean, it was just kind of like Goliath coming to town and beating you up for one weekend and then leaving, and then you get a few years off to recover, right? And we obviously saw everything he did, but we didn't suffer through it. So I never had the hate for him that I think a lot of Dolphins or Jets fans did. But
Steelers,
you did,
everybody.
Oh my gosh, yeah. But like the perspective I had regarding Tom is a little bit more like wishy-washy. It was kind of like, oh wow, he won again. Oh my gosh, he won again. And you're just like constantly doing that to the point of like amazement, right? It was never this hate. It just went from like, hey, I don't really care. Like, what's Rex Grossman going to do for us this year?
You know,
you know, but that's really crazy and interesting. I think that's a unique perspective that both of you guys have that a lot of people don't have.
So funny. That Super Bowl, same thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
And the number of 2-minute drives that I had seen where it was like, okay, you know, the Jets just score a great touchdown to go up by 4. Yep. Tom Brady gets the ball with 1:57 left. And it's like,
way too much.
It got
time.
To a point where it was like, it's over. Like, it could be a minute. It's like, it's too much time.
Yep.
We should have taken a knee or something. Like, this is, it was not even like, I'm hoping that he messes up. It's like, it's our fault because he's going to do it. Like, he's a sicko. It's so just like clockwork. This. It's happening.
You'll love this, Michael. So this year, Tua, Tyreek, some of the fastest players in the league are on our team, right? There's a game, and I wish I remember which game, but you'll love this as an AFC East thorn in your flesh. But there's a time where it's almost the end of the half. There's 42 seconds left. And I'm thinking, I've been here. I can go have a beer and I can go make lunch because there's no way we're going to do anything with 42 seconds. And they're about to kick the field goal. I'm going to run the clock down. And we've been doing this forever. And McDaniels takes a timeout to save a couple extra seconds at 42 seconds. And I'm going, no way. Do we have a team that now can move the ball across the 50 in 42 seconds? And sure enough, we did and scored a touchdown. We were already winning by 21 points. And I'm going, this is what Patriots fans must have felt like. Like, don't leave a second on that clock.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd rather you take 3 here than get in that end zone, take a knee at the 1, and don't give the ball back to Tom Brady because it's -4. If you score, or it's wiped. It's if you score, if you kick a field goal too early, it's -4.
You
didn't make any progress.
Yeah.
So that was amazing this year. I'm like, I hope I have more years of this. Please. I was telling my wife, trying to explain. That's so funny. It's interesting. I mean, it's tough because I've been making this argument for a long time. I coached high schoolers for 10 years. Everyone talks about the GOATs, but we brought up some good points. And I always love to talk about the business side and try to motivate anybody listening. Not that I'm motivational in any way, but the people that the real GOATs that everyone can kind of undeniably say, people that they put around them, number one, the mentality, the not whining. We never talked about that, but it's hard to go after somebody when they're, or it's hard to go to hate on someone being a GOAT when they're not whining and they're just hustling, like grinding, you know, and all those guys that we mentioned grind and women that we mentioned. So that's a good message for the goated mentality.
Let's Sorry, we had some out. Dogs. Dogs barking in the background.
It's a great point because I think so much about being a goat is your mentality. It's kind of the most important part. And there's accountability, selflessness, obsession, there's all of that rolled into one. I think one of the biggest things, if you're talking about a team sport, is the greatest players of all time in any team sport make their teammates exponentially better. They make everybody else better. You look at even Michael, who wasn't, you know, there are players today that are better passers than Michael was. He was a good passer, but he wasn't like LeBron is an unbelievable passer.
Amazing passer.
A lot of the guys in today's NBA are, you know, averaging 10 assists, all that good stuff. But the way that that team rode with him, the way that he shaped Scottie Pippen to become the dog that he became on defense. And like, you just think about, and after a press conference, when you lose, it's, I have to be better. We have to be better. There's no excuses. And it sounds like, you know, I'm old man, get off my lawn, but it's a mindset, and when you're the leader, the people around you follow your lead. And so if you're making excuses, the people in your locker room are going to make excuses. Mm-hmm. And that's not what you want. You want them getting in. You want to be getting in the earliest and leaving the latest. If you're holding yourself to that standard, how can they not? Because they're worse than you. So everybody follows suit. And I think that is... I honestly do think that's sort of a chink in LeBron's armor. I don't think he has, not saying he's not a competitor because he is, but if you look at the greatest ever, they're psychos. They are, and they take a little bit more accountability, I think.
Bingo. Yeah.
Than he has.
They take the time to invest in people. Like how many people is LeBron, who's LeBron still friends with? I tell kids this, like that he played with. Like he just burns through people. I love, and you'll like this, I love Draymond Green. I think Draymond Green is a GOAT. I love Draymond. I tell my family, I'm the Draymond Green of our family. I'll punch you in the face. If you're acting up or you're being lazy, I'll punch you in the face. And you're going to love me for it because without me, you're not going to make it. But Draymond became an incredible passer. Can't shoot worth a lick, but he gets shots up and they let him get his shots up. Mm-hmm. Like if he was doing that stuff with LeBron, he would have been like, let's trade this dude for Tyson Chandler. Let's trade somebody that can catch alley-oops or let's trade somebody. Like these guys that lead, like Michael Jordan and Steph Curry, invest in those. And even when you could see when Draymond got this like 43rd tech of the season, he's like, Steph was like crying. He's like, golly, like, come on. Like your little brother just is going to jail. Like he's just like, what? Come on, man, stop it. And LeBron's like, and instead, now picture J.R. Smith shooting too early. And he's looking at him like, remember that famous
he's showing him up.
Where he's like,
yeah,
you idiot.
That was an incredible game. That was game one of
disrespecting his guy. Yeah,
2019. Yeah,
where Steph and Michael probably wouldn't have done that. They would have moved to the next thing and not been in that situation. And then the other thing is Peyton Manning. I love hearing about Peyton Manning. This dude, when people would join his teams, he would drive them crazy the first couple weeks with extra time to test whether they were really dedicated to being great. And Jeff Saturday and him still hate each other. They love each other, but they hate each other because he's like, that dude is so annoying. He's a psycho because I couldn't sleep. If we flew to Denver, I had to be with him the whole plane ride talking about plays that we already talked about 8,000 times and cadences. He's a psycho. And if you weren't that ready to endure that, you didn't survive in Indianapolis. You didn't. And that's kind of how businesses need to be. And that's how Chris, I tried to push him to the edge so many times and he didn't. No, but you learn that from sports as us sports guys see in the goated mentality. It's huge. You're right. Psychos.
Because if you're not doing it, somebody else is, right? Like they're
bingo.
If you want to beat Peyton Manning during his time, and it's not like he won every single Super Bowl, but if you want to beat him, you better be working harder than him want to even have a chance. Like,
bingo.
Yeah.
We talk about Larry Bird. Larry Bird's down here in Naples. I played golf with him. I've seen him. I mean, I've been around him a bunch. And he plays, and he tells guys that we've talked to, he's like, he told these guys, my buddy Coach Donahue, he told him he would wake up in the middle of the night and try to shoot baskets because he couldn't sleep because the kids in L.A., the kids in California were up at that time because of the time change. He's like, until they go to sleep, I can't go to sleep. And he had already put in his 8 hours, 10 hours of shots and everything. But he would make his rebounder come out and rebounder his parents because the kids in L.A. were awake. I'm like, who thinks like that?
Unbelievable. Incredible Larry Bird story, which I think a lot of people know, but it's worth bringing up because if you talk about goated mentality, this is it. I think this is Larry Bird's third three-point contest in a row. He's won the previous two. Comes into the locker room. This is all stars. You know, everybody's great. He's won the last two three-point contests. Still got his warm-up on, and he just walks in and goes, so who's coming in second?
Who's coming in second? I love it.
Who's coming in second?
That's
and
one of the best
he
ever.
Does not take his warm-up off when he goes to shoot. He's still got his little, like, jacket on. Doesn't even take it off. Don't need to. Needs to hit the last, like, two balls on the rack to win. Lets it fly. Last one. Walks off, shaking the number one. Ball game.
I love it.
Come on. Like,
his wild.
So his rebounder lives in Naples. So his rebounder that he's had since he was in Indiana State, right, is where he went, still is with him and still rebounds for him. I mean, if we went to his house tonight, what is it, Thursday? I bet he played golf today. If he's in town, he might be at broadcasting. I bet he's shooting tonight. He's nuts. And his rebounder has been with him for 40 years, 30 years. Maybe 40, and he still will not go to sleep until he makes 30, 40 free throws without hitting the rim, and he has to start over. Like, these psychos take it to another level, and I love it. It's the best kind of psycho ever, and the world needs more of them that are so dedicated to greatness, you know? But And if it hit the rim, it was, I mean, it's the same thing that these guys, I love those stories. Cause like, what are you talking about? A lot of kids trying to make 40 free throws in a row and then I'll go to sleep. Or then I get to play Fortnite. He's trying to not hit the, he was trying to make shots where he didn't hit the net on mic and drills or something. Just taking it to another level to be great. What have you seen in business that, have you seen any, these psychos in business working at these Fortune, Square's got to be a Fortune 500.
Think so?
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing is, it's very similar. You just have to be dedicated to being the best. And I think it's a lot easier in the working world, like, especially at a big company. It's very clear what you have to do. I think it's at a smaller company, it's just about doing all the things that need to be done. And you probably need a little bit of prioritization and kind of routine and just consistently doing the things that need to get done. But at a big company, it's pretty easy. It's just like outperform, do more. Take great pride in what you do. And a lot of times that means probably spending more time than other people are. That's the easiest way, right? Like the easiest way to be better than other people at what you're doing is just spend more time and you'll probably do better.
It's good.
Not to jump in, but I think that's why sports are so unique in a way, because it kind of transcends daily life. Whereas I kind of feel like if we're going to take the attributes of what it means to be a GOAT and apply that to business, it doesn't mean the same thing. Because if you apply the same attributes to business, you probably are actually like losing out on other aspects of your life that like you should be attending to as a GOAT, whether that's your family and your friends and your loved ones. And like being a GOAT, you know, in your general life means like having a good balance and relationship with your work. Whereas if your work is being a professional athlete, like you basically go, like Steph goes and does these things, right? Mm-hmm. But then still goes and like is with his family and his daughter and like all these things that like, you know, are also so amazing about, you know, why he's so great. But I feel like if you just take, you see it. You see these crazy people, right? With you see all these families, these guys on Wall Street who just sell their life to New York City, right? And their families blow up, right? Like, what's great about that? Like, really, what's great about that? Nothing, right? No. So it's kind of like, I don't know. It's a little different, I feel like.
Yeah, true. And I think a big part of it, and this is where the sports comparison, I think, is relevant, is greatness is consistency. That's the hardest part. So if you watch the NBA or even like any sport, really, if you watch the PGA Tour, any given week, somebody could go out there and shoot a really, really low number. Or if you watch the NBA, people get 40 and they could look incredible. But the hardest part about greatness and what makes the GOATs so special is that over an 82-game season, there are probably three guys every year where it's like, oh my gosh, they're doing it every night. They're legitimately scoring 30 every game. And that is crazy. That consistency, or they never have two bad games in a row. There were seasons where I'd watch Steph. If he hit two threes, like the game that he set the record for most three-pointers, or I guess Clay actually.
No.
Yeah, when he set the record before Clay beat him, he had 13. The game before, he had gone one for 12. And I knew it. I was like, he just doesn't have two bad games in a row. He's going to come out and he's going to, it's a guarantee. And I think that's where you could take it into normal life of like being great at like being a great friend or being a great husband or father or like in a relationship or at work is not measuring yourself by your peak. Like, oh, I did this really great thing this one time or whatever. It's like every day you have to be good at this. Every day you have to work on it. And that's the hardest part because everybody can flash brilliance. Everybody is brilliant in their own way, but it takes work to do that consistently. That's where the greatness is.
Yeah, it's great. To maximize your gifts. We're all blessed with many, many gifts, and that work ethic is crucial. I joke a little bit with my little brothers, but they're grown now. And I tell people when I'm talking to younger kids and next generation, I'm like, let's say when Michael Jordan was playing, he had to put in 225% effort. And that's obviously a joking number, right? I said, here's an advantage. And I've talked through all this stuff today when I'm talking to you. And here's an advantage you have. Your generation, we're all looking at, is the most lazy, destined for failure generation. And last generation probably looked at us, look at my generation like that, right? But I'm telling you right now, I know for a fact that if you just put in 20% more effort than the other guy, they used to have to put in 200% because they had to. They had a chip on their shoulder. The bar is so low, and we all see it. We're not foolish to it. It's whatever you want to talk about, sports, mathematics, whatever you want to be good at, computer programming, computer gaming. Now you got esports and you got every advantage. And all you did is put a little more time into getting better at things instead of whining, slamming your controller, or giving up on a free throw or whatever. You have an advantage, and they seem to be excited because they're also a generation that's not that excited for the future. They've been through recessions. They've been through two sides of the political party hating each other, stolen this, stolen that, and there's just not much hope. And you want to have hope, and it's hard to be great if you don't have much hope in your position or your marriage or your other things. So a lot of times it's that mental check, and then harnessing your gifts, like you said, is so good because God's blessed us with gifts. And there's nobody that God has created not in his image. And for that reason, you got certain things that are inside of you that you want to harness. You want to find those things. And there's stuff that you want to get rid of too. I always joke with my wife and talk with my wife about getting rid of the genes that our parents, the bad genes, and then let's harness and pour into the really good genes that our parents left us, right? And or that we got from them, from our lineage. And if you do that, that's a good starting point. But I love it. Oh, the other thing in the business world I was going to say is, I mean, you hit it on the head, and it's, I've seen it too in the corporate world. It's nice. You see success when people care about each other, when there's an investment in the people that are working there. There's not many businesses that really do well for a long time when there's recycling of employees, and that usually means there's not gratitude, there's not a good environment, there's not a good vibe. And it's the same thing at home. I mean, I have two kids. It's the same thing. If there's not appreciation, my wife, if there's not time, if there's not a true, genuine care for what that person's doing or what you're recognizing, then it doesn't translate well. And all of that combines to what I've learned is being selfless. If you put others first and you care about others, and truly love others above yourself, which is one of the hardest things you can do, businesses do better, marriages do better, friendships do better, and you'll be happier because you're not so consumed with yourself that you're constantly looking at, oh man, I made 12 threes last time and now I have to do it every time. Chris and I talked about it on the golf course today. It's like, yeah, I would shoot 6 under. The worst thing that could have happened to me a year ago was to shoot 3 or 4 under or whatever it was and just have a glimpse of something, right? And then the next day I'm right back to 90. And I'm like, what? This is not me. I was a new person. I mean, I thought I figured it out and I got this new.
Yeah.
And now it's just funny because now it's like I was thinking about myself only and how many times how many foursomes or tea times after that I ruined the day when I could have had a great day just thinking, this is great. I'm with the boys or I'm with whoever, so my family. So it's an outlook. We've hit it on the head. I love this stuff. It's great.
I'd like to shift a little bit to golf and talk a little bit about what we're seeing from Scotty right now. It's so amazing. We've talked about it with a lot of guests, but what's your take on what Scotty's doing compared to somebody like Tiger, since it seems like everybody's starting to make that comparison and how crazy that is. But, and then I want to know who your greatest golfer of all time is.
Yeah, I mean, great question. I could talk golf forever. I think Scotty is not getting enough hype for what he's doing, but I think that comes largely from he's kind of the Nikola Jokic of golf, where he's just out there. He has perspective in his life, like to Kevin's point. Like he has a great family, and if you listen to his interviews, his parents really emphasized the way you treat people is the most important thing. And the way that you are kind to other people and are thinking of other people. And he grew up, he was not the only child, and he was always having to think about his siblings and all of this. And his faith is really important to him. And so I think that really frees you up to do something like compete in major championships, just because it's not the be all end all. It's very important. He's very competitive and he wants to win. But you watch him and it feels like he's got this calm about him, because the outcome doesn't matter. It's not in the end going to really change his life, or at least you can see that in the way he carries himself. But I think in terms of what he's doing on the golf course, it's crazy. The ball striking is unbelievable. And for non-golf fans, it just basically means anytime Scotty hits the ball with at any club except for his putter, it's basically going exactly where he wants it to. And his putter is not awful. It's just, it doesn't have to be very good. It can be average and he still wins. And even when it's bad, he sometimes still wins. I don't think he's quite where Tiger was, just because Tiger did it for so long. Tiger was doing what Scotty is doing now for like 5 to 10 years. Yeah. And there were just championships where the entire Sunday was talking about, is he going to break the record for lowest score in a US Open? Not even, is anybody going to threaten him at the top of the leaderboard? Like, not happening. So I can't really speak to greatest golfer of all time before I started watching golf, just because I haven't watched enough. I think probably you could make the argument for Jack Nicklaus. I think it's Tiger to me, just because of the it factor. I mean, some of these majors, it's just like, dude, it's different. He completely revitalized the sport and he changed the way that people prepare their bodies for playing. And he's just one of these guys. Brief tangent. I feel like a lot of these goats, their hand eye is ridiculous. They're these hand eye wizards. And you listen to Tiger talk about the golf swing and it's like everything is in his hands. He doesn't even, there's nothing mechanical about it. He's just like, I look at the flag and my hands just do it. Steph is the same way. Like a lot of these players, it's just like, there's this extra hand eye that they have where anything that they're doing with their hands is crazy. But just in terms of all the shots that Tigers can hit, the creativity, the nerves under pressure, and then that last Masters, I will never forget. That was one of the most special sporting events that I've ever gotten to watch. I didn't think I was going to get to see that again. And it was one of those where everybody was there. Everybody who was anybody was at the top of that leaderboard. Everybody was playing well. And it was this reminder of, hey, for all of you young kids who didn't actually get to play against me in my peak, this is what it was like. And you don't stand a chance. I'm better. I'm that guy. This entire gallery is here to watch me this week.
Like you said earlier, right? He just did it. He didn't have to go out there and win that Masters. No. He didn't have to play. By this point, it wasn't just the surgeries and everything. It was the leg. And he just did it. Like, undeniable, just absolutely undeniable.
In the most Tiger way possible, like, that shot on 12, to me, if you want to describe why Tiger is so incredible at Augusta, just pull up the clip of what the two groups in front of him did on 12 and what he did on 12. It's like, he just does not make the mistake. He knows how to play this golf course. He has the nerves to hit the shot that he needs to hit, and he's not going to let himself get taken off of his mission here. And he's going to hit it to the middle of the green. He's going to keep going and he's going to get it done. And he's going to make some crazy eagle putts and he's going to do all the Tiger things, but he's never going to give you an inch. He's not going to make a mistake.
12 is so interesting for the Masters, because we see it. Everybody knows the spot to hit it every time. But for some reason, I think it's because it's a par three and it's short, right? People that are in contention on Sunday go, this is my opportunity. Whereas Tiger is just so, he knows that this isn't it. This isn't the hole I need a birdie. Like, this isn't it. But it's so attractive. People can't resist.
I know.
The pin's just sitting there. Only what, 100, what is it, 125 yards? It's something ridiculously short,
yeah.
Right? I could be off by
it's like
10,
I think it's like
yards,
140. It's like 140, a, it's like 145? A soft nine for them, or maybe like
yeah,
a pitching
yeah. leg. Yeah, that's right. So, but it's just like, oh my gosh. Like, in that moment, Tiger just knows and has the mental strength to say, this isn't it. I'm not going after it here.
No.
Every time. And even the greatest players on the PGA Tour in that year, they all went for it. Like,
yep.
They all tried it and failed. It's like, wow.
And as like a sidebar, it was really cool this past Masters to see Schauffele and Wyndham Clark in a situation where they had to go for it.
Yeah.
And it really, for some reason, I don't know why, but it kind of made me think of like high school or college golf, where you're in match play and it's like, there's no other option. You have to, you're just going to try to hit a shot or in a practice round or something like that, where it's just two incredibly skilled players. They have this shot in their bag. They're never going to hit this shot. Like, Scheffler didn't have to hit that shot. He hit it to the middle of the green. He hit the Tiger shot and he two putted and it was great. Wyndham Clark and Schauffele were two back or something. They had to make a move there.
Mm-hmm.
And they both actually hit the shot.
Yeah.
They both hit the exact same little cut using the ridge to bring it back. And it was it was a pretty special moment to see both of them under pressure. Actually, just a little glimpse into how skilled these players are of like, yes, usually you're not supposed to hit this. It's like all caution to the wind.
To.
It doesn't matter. We have to try it. And it was like, whoa, I can't believe they actually both, that's impossible. And they just both did it.
It's funny how much that shot changes for these top players when you're in a position like Wyndham and Schauffele were compared to being one or two back. Because for them, it was kind of like, they kind of blew it, right? They both hit it in the water, right? Wyndham, I think on the hole prior, right? He went in the water, I think, or maybe that was Oberg, but either way, like, you're 5-6 back now. It's like, okay, like, I'm playing with house money. Let's go. The pressure there isn't as high as when you're two back, right? And you have to make that shot. So, like, you see how skilled, like, Francesco Molinari is during the 2019 Masters, is as skilled as these guys, right? Has that shot in his bag, too. If he's 5-6 back, I think probably he hits it no problem. But it's
he hits it to
position,
5 feet.
In the tournament they're in, that dictates how difficult of a shot it is, which is interesting.
Yeah, and back then they had to. Like, if Tiger was in the field, like you said, it was like, who's coming in second this weekend? It's not, there was never a discussion. So you have to, I mean, imagine the pressure, like, you're already 3 strokes down, 4 strokes worse than this guy. And you got to go after it on these ones that you don't want to. We saw that at the players too. You're looking at like 16, 17, 18, those finishing holes, and it's like, no chance on 17. Let's just try to get out of there with that pin, or let's get out of there with a par, and then we'll try it on 18 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He gets that look too. It's he and Jordan, and those are the two that come to mind. They get this look, and there's this, you know, he hits the birdie putt, you know, maybe on 8 or something, like, to get him back in it. And there's this, like, it's like an angry fist bump. Like, I feel like Tiger is almost one of those players who plays a little bit better when he's a little bit angry. You know, he bogeys one or he makes a tough par, and then it's like, I'm birdieing 5 in a row. And I'm going to, that last fist bump is just like the release and the crowd. And it's just, that Masters was so sick because the crowd was extra loud and you could see people on different holes, even like Brooksy on 16 or something like that. Hits a horrible drive after Tiger had a big hole, and you could hear the roar from the other side.
Dude, you could see it on his face on television. When he looked over, remember it?
Yeah.
He looked petrified.
He was white. He was white as a ghost.
Yeah.
It's like, no, this guy's a freight train and he's coming. He's here. It's happening. He's one back and he's here.
So true. I don't see that. Now that you guys bring that up, I don't see that in Scottie Scheffler. I love Scottie Scheffler. But there was a tournament 4 or 5 ago. Well, when he went on the streak, there was one he lost to, and he missed like an 8-foot putt to send it to extras. And I don't think Tiger would let himself putt the way Scotty Scheffler putts. I don't think he would allow this. And there's something to be said for that because it'd probably cost him his marriage or whatever else. Like, I'm just going to stick at the course. I'm going to light this place and stay here until I start putting correctly or hitting it on the same path. So
yeah,
that's a good point.
Well, to go back to my initial question, right, which was like the comparison to Tiger, like it was kind of a tee up question, right? Like, because I think nobody in their right mind is making that comparison.
Mm-mm.
All due respect to Scottie Scheffler, yeah. Like he would be insulted almost, I think, if you said, oh my gosh, you're like Tiger. He's like, no. And like, he's not. Like Keith Stewart talked about this in depth on the podcast we had him on. Go listen to that if you guys haven't listened to that. But he's a handicapper for the PGA Tour and really went through the stretch that Tiger Woods went through, where at a point he was like, he had won 7 of 9 or 7 of 8 tournaments in a row or something. And it was like minus 250 or minus 300, something crazy.
Well, the next closest person.
To win the Masters or to win the PGA Championship. Oh, yeah. I'm forgetting which tournament it was. I'm botching this story. But of course, like that's insane odds to win a golf tournament. And of course he goes out and he wins it.
He did. That's the crazy thing. Yeah, like, he was like, it was like minus 500 or something. Like bet 500 to win ridiculous. 100. And it was, which is absurd in a
before the tournament
sport
started.
Like golf, where it's like there are the bet, the field is always the bet regardless of which golfer you're talking about.
I mean,
it's absurd to bet for any golfer
minus
to have minus odds in general to win.
Before a tournament started. It's like I had a buddy listen to that and he's like, that's insane. He goes, you realize that the Dallas Stars up 3-1 in a series or 3-0 in a series, taking the other team to come back, which has never been done, like, or having them win is like something like that, right? It's the same thing. And the tournament hasn't even started yet. Minus 250 for Dallas to win the series 4-0 or whatever, which is like very likely. It's like the same thing. And he has to beat the whole field. Like there were some comparisons after that show.
Yeah.
Insane. Because
ridiculous.
Even today you saw, I mean, everything was plus. Yeah, you're right.
But
I mean, there
it's
are people
natural, though,
making
I
that
think,
comparison.
Like, I think we have a tendency after we see greatness to the extent of like Jordan or Tiger, we miss it and we're looking for the next thing. But and so we want to say, oh my gosh, Scotty is the next Tiger, because we have that void of we just got to watch history. We got to watch somebody who is historically great and we want the next. The sport isn't the same without that. It's a gift to have that. And more often than not, it's like that's what makes this person so great, though, is we might not see somebody that great for the rest of our lives. That's how great this person was. Like. Maybe we get to see somebody else who's as dominant as Tiger was, but maybe not, and that's okay. Like that's why it's so special when it's happening. Like that's why that chip, that Tiger chip is so electric. It's like that does not happen. That
For sure.
Nobody makes that shot. That does not, although what's his name? Thagala hit that one, actually. Didn't he?
He did.
At the Masters, he had a very similar chip.
It's like the same shot.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
How about Caitlin Clark?
Yeah.
Caitlin Clark, I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean, I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I still am. But she didn't win. She didn't win the championship ever. I mean, she got lost both times, right?
She won like not this past year, but 2 years ago.
Did she?
They beat LSU and then they lost to LSU this year.
Oh, okay.
I think. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure.
I don't think she had a national championship. Let's look it up. But, I mean, it's so tough because you're right. Everyone's looking for... She lost to South Carolina.
No.
And they beat LSU this year. They lost LSU.
No, they lost this year.
They lost this year, but they beat LSU this year in the Final Four to go to the championship.
Right.
And they lost in the championship to LSU last year. But I just...
Oh, so she's never won?
It's the same thing. I don't think she's won a championship, but she is. And I was like walking around telling people like...
Yeah, no, she did not.
This is the next
We'll cut goal. That out of the podcast. We'll cut it. We'll cut it in post.
No, because a lot of people probably thought the same thing because I was like, this girl's unstoppable.
Yeah, you just assume.
Yeah, and she is the GOAT. She's the next Tiger Michael Jordan. And look, you look at it and you're like, oh, she didn't win. These guys were so badly trying to find the next like, what can I watch tonight? And I'm telling you, if you guys want to watch me golf, it's close.
Yeah. No, Caitlin Clark is, she's unbelievable. And it kind of, I mean, there are a lot of Steph comparisons. She plays a lot like Steph. Yeah. And Steph in college also didn't win. I mean, his team was worse. Sure. Funny enough, yeah. He was not really recruited by any Division I school besides Davidson. Yeah. But I think that just kind of speaks to college hoops. It's just tougher. Like the disparity or the standard deviation of like teams is much greater. Not to say Caitlin Clark's team wasn't great, but she'll be playing with better players and she'll be able to hang. And I got to say, the women's game, especially college basketball in the last couple years, I was watching it this time around. It's a beautiful game. They play beautiful basketball. They play, they pass. Just I can't say enough about it. Like, and honestly, I really did not enjoy watching men's college basketball this year. As someone who watches a lot of NBA, like the college men's game is a completely different game. They're allowed to play zone. There are some rule differences that make the games like way lower scoring, and the talent is not the same just because the NBA is crazy. But, you know, a lot of times it's just pass around the perimeter and take a contested three, and it's just kind of ugly. The women's game is passing, cutting, quick decision making. Everybody can dribble, like, in a way that if you watch even some of the best men's teams, like, it's like, wow, they've got three guys out there that do not want to dribble the ball.
So true.
All they want to do is shoot. Like, it's the skill level is not quite there. Whereas just the selflessness and the brand of basketball that I watched this women's tournament, I can't get enough of it. Like, I'm going to watch some of the WNBA. Like, it's, I think the women's game is headed for a really great place, because as people start to tune in to watch Caitlin Clark, they're going to realize, like, this is a really entertaining brand of basketball. This is fun. This is like, this is just great basketball. And if you love hoops, you're going to love it, because they're just playing the right way, and it's fun to watch.
So true. Yeah, it is the way it is. I mean, I was going to say earlier, and as a hoops fan, you'll get it too, but you described kind of like the dance. Like, they call it a dance. Mm-hmm. And when Michael played, when Kobe played, it was literally like they were dancing out there, right? It was like the smoothness, the way the game was supposed to be played. It was not supposed to be, I don't know, hot potato, hammer the guy, or stand in a zone. And I love zone defense. I do whatever it takes to win a game. I'll play any defense. I love the coaching aspect. I love watching UVA. Wasn't very good. He's a defensive coach. I like those college games, but you're exactly right. Like, you got guys that can't dribble. And it's interesting, like, when I was a GA and coached college basketball, and you hear guys still talk about it. The guys that Miami came over to FGCU and got worked years ago by FGCU. And the press conference after, the coach was like, yeah, I didn't build this team to beat FGCU. I got to compete in the ACC. So Reggie Johnson tonight was useless, because we're playing little white guards that shoot, and no one came in the paint. You're all scared of the paint. Well, you lost.
Yeah, it's
like,
exactly.
Your answer is like, you didn't recruit to beat FGCU. What are you talking about? They're in college. It's a college team. You can't beat that team. You can't figure out. But it happened this year too. It's like, oh, we didn't recruit to beat that team. We recruit to compete in the ACC against or Purdue. Imagine, they got to recruit a kid to try to stop Edie. Like, you got to put all your eggs in that guy basket, and that guy that's going to stop Edie might not be able to dribble the ball. And you just gave away four scholarships worth of aid to get the guy that's going to help stop Edie, or you're not going to compete. So it's interesting, but that's a great point. And there's the Indiana Fever season tickets, I guess, are like almost sold out or something, or they got TV. Amazing. I went to a couple of WNBA games, and I didn't think there was ever going to be a day there would be a sold out arena at a WNBA game. They're way too big. And it's happening. Caitlin Clark's a stud. I love the Pat McAfee show. She was on there, I think, twice already now, and cracking me up. I mean, she's got, you hear her talking there, and she's like, I mean, again, edifying other people. She talked about her teammates a lot, and I'm going, I don't know any of your teammates' names. I tuned in to watch you. And she's like, yeah, I had the best passer. Now I'm going to have this girl that I can pass to. She can knock down shots. And I'm going, this is a GOAT right here that's edifying mm-hmm. other people, that made her teammates better. Her teammates got drafted, had no signs of going to the WNBA, and made them better and poured into her. So I don't know. I can ramble. We could talk for hours about this stuff. I love it. Chris said that.
Yeah, we could. I mean, I think we're probably getting pretty close, Mike. But last thing, and we'll have to have you on, I think, more to talk about this another time. But one thing we didn't talk about that is another big part of your backstory and life is you're an extremely talented, proficient musician.
Yeah.
Mike's got multiple albums on Spotify, so definitely go check out that, Michael Buono. But I wanted to ask, in your opinion, you're an excellent piano player, have become a great guitar player, but who is the greatest piano player of all time?
That's such a great question. There are a lot of really good answers. I would say the best person I've ever seen is Elton John. And I've seen Billy Joel too, and I think he's up there. But when I went to this Elton John show, I saw him at MSG, and it was unbelievable. I mean, Elton John, he's getting up there. He's in his 70s. And just the stuff that he can do with that instrument and just the amount of fun that he has on the stage, it was incredible. There was one point he's in this, like, you know, fluorescent suit, essentially. I don't remember which color it was, but it was, you know, red or yellow or something. And he's just like, after one of the songs, the entire crowd is going crazy. And he's walking from left to right on the stage, kind of being like, yeah, let me hear it. Come on, more. Yeah, I know. Like, just in the most fun way possible. Like, this little old guy kind of like waddling around being like, yeah, let me hear it. But like, they did, I think it was Levon, where they basically turned it into a 10-minute song. And he was just soloing. And everybody else was jamming with him. And I think what I love about him the most is his improvisation. And Billy Joel has this too. But he'll just sit there and it's like this combination of jazz and blues and just a lot of blues influences, but it's chords and it's insane. And so I left that being like, my goodness, like I need to practice. This is like, this guy is on another level at the age of like, I don't know, 75, and he could still just absolutely tear it up. Yeah. So, and obviously his songwriting and everything like that. But yeah, he's,
yeah,
Billy Joel's right up there. And then dark horse, I would say Danny Federici with Bruce Springsteen. So like, okay, you'll hear him on like Thunder Road. He has a very unique style where if you listen to like Thunder Road or Jungle Land or those things, he's kind of playing melodies, but he's playing melodies with four fingers. He's playing melodies with chords that are four note chords, which is so hard to do. Like, I'll sit down and I'll try to play it and it's, you know, like the end of, what is it, Thunder Road? Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. And it's like so grand when you're playing it with all of the notes in the chord. It gives an extra feel to it in a way that I think is pretty unique to a lot of the different people that I've heard.
Definitely. No, I love it. That's a great lineup. It's a great 1-2-3.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably with you. I might say Billy Joel personally, but they're all amazing.
Yeah.
So. Well, Mike, we appreciate you coming on today, man. Where can people, you know, find you if they want to give you a follow or, you know, check out your music or you know, just learn more about you?
Michael B. Songs is my handle on the socials. I would say head to Spotify or Apple Music if that's your particular cup of tea. But yeah, I don't know if I have any musical projects in the work as of yet, but definitely check out Another Night Gone. That's an album that I wrote basically I wanted to make an album that sounded like the music that I grew up with, which was Fall Out Boy, Take This to Your Grave, Green Day, Weezer, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, we'll link those in the description. Again, man, great friend and even better man. So appreciate you coming on and kind of, you know, talking the shit with us today.
This is incredible. Awesome. I'm honored. Thanks for having me.
Let's do it again soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being on. Stay goated, everybody.
Stay goated.
Stay goated.